Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. I am Lee Cantor, and today we're going to be talking about a subject that's near and dear to my heart. It's wellness and the practicing of medicine in today's world. I got with me my co-host today, Tracy Palfrey. Welcome, Tracy.
Hello.
Now, Tracy, you've been involved in the wellness industry for quite some time. You want to share a little bit about what you've been up to?
Yeah, I've been a personal trainer for about, 21 years to this point. When I started, I was 17 years old, and the industry looked completely different from where we are today. We have shifted from, I would like to call it the Jane Fonda era, to a more of a movement pattern biomechanics kind of world, so that we are now tailoring workouts to match people's everyday life and improve their quality of life. So it's more than just weight loss and make me look pretty. That was the snapshot version of personal training there. What I have come across over the years is being able to integrate health and wellness as a whole, meaning medicine and fitness all in one, and being able to deal with all kinds of clients and people with all kinds of issues from all walks of the world, and having a good knowledge base of how that works. Also, being able to help the consumer kind of decipher out what's good and what's bad, because there's so much noise out there. So
now
that's kind of where we're going.
You brought with you Dr. Arnold Weil. Dr. Weil, welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
Can you share a little bit about your practice? How do you serve?
Sure. Our practice is non-surgical orthopedics, and we basically provide non-surgical orthopedic care and also pain management. And we're in Atlanta and Carrollton and Canton, and really been treating for probably 24 years now patients who have, you know, injuries, weekend warrior type of injuries, or really any type of orthopedic injury, any type of complaints of pain. And we try to keep patients from surgery and use a variety of methods, from therapy to personal trainers to injections and medications sometimes, to help control pain and restore function.
Now, are you a chiropractor?
No, I'm a physician.
So what made you choose this path? It sounds more holistic than a typical medical doctor path.
Well, it is holistic. I'm an MD. I trained and did my internship, actually, in obstetrics and gynecology. And
so
realized,
this is the logical leap?
Yeah, right? Sure, of course. But I realized that I really enjoyed more orthopedic types of injuries, and really liked helping patients, you know, get out of pain and get back to the activities that they like to do.
So now, can you define some terms for the listener? Like, what is non-invasive care?
Well, you know, most patients that hurt their back, they initially think, oh my gosh, I have a herniated disc, I have to have surgery. And really 95% of all back injuries are non-surgical. So we specialize in non-surgical treatment, which means everything short of someone having to have surgery. So the non-invasive really are things that don't require any type of instrumentation intervention, such as physical therapy or medications. We do a lot of, you know, invasive treatments, I guess you would say, but still non-surgical, like different types of injections. Most patients, or most people, have heard of epidural injections if they have a herniated disc. But we do a lot of injection procedures. We do stem cell therapy, PRP. We've been doing that for several years. And so we're really on the forefront, especially with sports injuries, of stem cell treatments as well.
Can you share a little bit about that? Like, I've heard of stem cells, but I don't understand how they pertain to this. Like, how do you use a stem cell to help your back?
Sure. It's really quite exciting, because like a back injury, for example, can occur from a muscle injury, from a disc that's herniated, a tear in the disc. It can be in the joints or the bones. And a variety of things can cause back pain. And a lot of times, the more conventional treatment, although it works most of the time, sometimes, you know, patients still have pain. It doesn't get better. So stem cells, actually, and what we use, the stem cell precursors that kind of activate those stem cells, help the body regenerate that tissue that's damaged or injured or abnormal. So, for example, somebody, we do this a lot with patients with osteoarthritis or knee injuries, a meniscal tear or a ligament tear in a knee, and we'll do stem cell therapy on the knee, and it helps regenerate those torn or damaged or injured structures and components of the knee, and they heal, they regenerate, and the patients are able to get back their normal function. In the back, it's very similar. We do intradiscal stem cell treatments to help heal that disc that's causing pain.
So you take the stem cell and inject it in the area that's injured?
Exactly. So, we're trying to promote inflammation and regeneration of tissue. So, for example, if the disc is the injured area, we would inject it into the disc. If the medial collateral ligament is strained or partially torn, we would inject into the medial collateral ligament. So we do inject into the injured area.
So now inflammation seems to be at the heart of a lot of this.
Yes.
And then there's lots of ways to deal with inflammation though, right?
Absolutely.
What are some of the ways that a person that's having some troubles can kind of lower the inflammation?
Sure. Well, most injuries have a component of inflammation, and we see a lot of back pain. So, for example, back injuries always have a component of inflammation and also muscle spasm. And typically, you know, there's always this question of, do I use heat or do I use ice for my back or for an injured area? Ice is really good to help control inflammation and help control swelling. And sometimes we will prescribe that type of treatment along with an anti-inflammatory. You can take over-the-counter anti-inflammatories like Advil or Tylenol or Aleve or something of that nature. But we often prescribe an anti-inflammatory medication to also help diminish that inflammation. In areas where there may be a lot of local inflammation, for example, if you injure your shoulder and your shoulder becomes very inflamed, and you may not be able to see that or feel that, but there's inflammation at the area of that injury, we might inject a steroid, a corticosteroid, right into that area. That also reduces inflammation. So we have medications, we have injectables such as steroids, and we have ice to also help reduce inflammation.
So for the layperson that's out there that may have tweaked something, their first path should be something like ice first. Is that what you recommend? Or
well,
you probably recommend go right to see you.
Like, absolutely. Come to see me. There's always been, philosophy of, resting the injured area, elevating it, applying ice in the case.
Is that still valid?
I think so, yeah. And compression, of course, if it's really swollen. But ice is good, rest is good, and typically inflamed area will often go away within several days. But if it persists, what I always say, if you injure yourself, use ice, stop your activities, just take it easy. If it persists after a couple days, that's when you need to come see me.
Now, isn't inflammation or swelling your body's way of saying don't bend that?
Well, sure. It is a way of the body saying, hey, we need to, take it easy, kind of trying to protect that area. So it does serve a purpose.
So now when you if you have inflammation, then you take like a Advil or Aleve or one of those things, is that solving the problem or is that just making you feel better?
Well, it's doing both. I mean, a lot of times the pain is coming from the inflammation itself. So by taking Aleve or taking anti-inflammatory, it is reducing the inflammation, which oftentimes is the problem or is the root source of the pain.
You got to get in the microphone. That's what I was pointing to. Sorry about that. Now, when you started your practice and you got involved and you kind of pivoted to this side of the medicine world, how have you seen it change over the years?
Well, I think that the way I've seen it change and the way most of people out there have seen it change is they've lost a little control over their own medical care. And, where it used to be, I had a very close and a nice relationship with patients. Now it's become a little bit less so because patients are really dictated where they can go, oftentimes by their insurance company. And even more frustrating is the fact that, even if I'm seeing the patient, we come up with a really great treatment plan that is very effective, but their insurance may not cover a particular injection or more than, 2 weeks of physical therapy or another treatment. So oftentimes the patient's best road to treatment, there's so many roadblocks that are thrown up from their insurance companies that it becomes very disheartening.
So are you saying that if you think that maybe they need 50 sessions of physical therapy, but their insurance only covers 20, they kind of stop at 20 and they're kind of on their own from that point forward? Is that how it's
actually evolved? I might say they need 20 and their insurance might stop at 10. So that's not uncommon. For example, in pain management, treating patients with pain, oftentimes these are patients that have already gone through physical therapy and had medications. And based upon their MRI or based upon their injury or previous surgery, they're a really good candidate for injection procedures, but their insurance company puts up roadblocks. And one of the most ridiculous things I've seen is the insurance company saying something is experimental, but this has been, a procedure that's been done for, decades and has been shown by numerous studies to be effective.
So now how does the consumer deal with that? Like they just have to either fork over the cash, they got to find the money to pay for the extra 10 sessions, or do you give them kind of a do-it-yourself kind of rehab on your own?
You mean like give them the needle and syringe go inject yourself?
Not a needle and syringe, yeah. But give them like, here's some stretches you can do, or here, you know, go to the gym or walk the pool.
Well, we try to do all the above. I mean, certainly we have a nice website, lowbackpain.com, which we have different exercises on there also for patients to, you know, access and to try to use those exercises. We try to use in cases where patients don't have funding or their insurance company is not going to pay, or they may be all out of pocket, they can either pay or they can use. We work with a lot of different funding companies that actually help provide the funds for the patients to get the treatments.
So you're still trying to serve them in terms of treating them the best way you know how, but, and you try to kind of help them come up with a way to fund that.
Yes, we do.
So that's what, this is how it's evolved. Medicine has evolved.
It's crazy. Yeah, it really is. It's turned into a circus.
Yeah.
So now how does personalized medicine fit into this?
Well, I think we treat every patient individually. And I think, you know, medicine's become less personalized because use back pain for an example. And I know many clinics that, you know, patients come in and every patient's treated the same, given the same medication, sent for the same type of injections, given the same prescription for therapy. But really, every patient is different. I could have five patients with back pain or five patients with shoulder pain, and they're all going to have different scenarios. They're all going to be different. And I think the care needs to be individualized for that particular patient. So the key, though, really is customer service. And you can really take the physician out of the equation. I think the most important aspect, and I've always felt this way, is really the customer service provided in the office itself. From the time patients call up and encounter somebody on the phone to the moment they walk into the front door and interact with the office staff. So it's really the customer service which becomes more important from a personalization standpoint.
So now when you're dealing with customer service, that seems pretty forward thinking because, I've been to the doctor throughout the years. Doctors tend not to look at themselves in that way in terms of customer service.
Well, that's true, and it's unfortunate. And I've always felt like that was really probably the most important aspect of our practice was customer service. And, you know, I do a lot of consulting and traveling around the country, and I've always come back and said, I've never seen a staff that was as impressive as my own, because we really preach customer service. Every day we are geared toward providing customer service, going out of the way to our patients. In fact, yesterday in meeting with some of my staff and talking, one of my previous patients came up and my receptionist said, I took her home one time during the lunch hour because she didn't have a way home. Now that's going above and beyond, and that's something that we really advocate doing for all our patients. But you know, it just goes to show that, you know, customer service is so ingrained, at least for us, that we're always thinking about how we can provide a more positive and personalized experience for our patients.
Now, when you're consulting with other physicians, what is their reason not to have that high level of customer service?
I don't think there's any case of somebody consciously saying we're not going to provide customer service, but you have to realize, you know, and you asked a few moments ago how medicine has changed. And in today's environment, there are so many pressures on medical practices, on physicians, on staff. Ridiculous pressures mandated by Medicare, mandated by insurance companies that really have nothing to do with patient care, really have to do with only, you know, filling out ridiculous, endless, you know, forms that really have no bearing except to try to put up roadblocks into us, providing the care for our patients and also getting reimbursed appropriately for the care we provide. So I think there's so many other necessities that most practices, you know, really have to do that customer service is kind of
suffers.
It does.
When there's so much bureaucracy.
Absolutely.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, you mentioned a website. Can you share that again?
Sure. Our website is lowbackpain.com.
And then on that, you said there's videos. There's a lot of information that's kind of would help somebody in a self-help manner, as well as if they wanted to reach out to you, they can get a hold of you.
Absolutely. There are videos. There are educational resources. There are exercises. There's a way to chat with the office. There's a way to contact the office to schedule an appointment. And really, it's a great resource for back pain and for orthopedics and pain management.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Tracy, you have another guest here today?
Yes. Dr. Raj Pandya. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Dr. Raj, is that appropriate to call you that?
You can. It's my first name, but that's cool.
All right. Can you share a little bit about your practice?
Yeah, I'm the founder, president of the Atlanta Orthopedic Institute. Basically, we have five locations. We're throughout the metro area, primary one being in Buckhead. Have a background in sports medicine, trained with Dr. James Andrews and Dr. Bill Clancy, with a pedigree for really taking care of professional athletes, and have essentially created a model to deliver that type of care to all my patients, essentially focusing on really the type of care we deliver to elite athletes, to the weekend warriors and the workers and the grandmothers and everybody else.
So now when you're dealing with a professional athlete one day and then a grandmother the next day, what is the biggest difference in the when you're dealing with them? Because I would think the elite athlete, that's their job. Their body is their job. So they have to get back as quickly as possible to perform at a high level. The grandmother, you know, she just wants to get on the floor and play with the grandkids.
You know, that's a great question. I mean, I think, you know, and that's our job, is to really convey that to everyone that comes into our office, that, you know, we want them to be the best they can be. At the end of the day, really, sports medicine is a metaphor. I don't really think of myself as taking care of just people that have athletic injuries. I mean, ideally, every single person wants to be the best they can be. And I don't care if you're 90 years old or if you're six. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is it's really a philosophical attitude that you have to take. What is it that really a pro athlete has? They have commitment. They see themselves in a certain way. They have training. I mean, they put the dedication and they have the education, and then they have an entire team around them to be able to facilitate that. What most people lack is the education to think that they can be treated like superstars. And what they lack is the team around them to be able to enable that. That's what we want to be able to do. And that takes really, I think, top level physicians, clinicians, a staff, rehabilitation, education. You know, one of the things we've created is really a world-class facility to be able to do that. And we want to focus a lot on the technological advancements in medicine. And that includes biologics as well as surgical advancements. And, you know, I'm a surgeon, so most of my life is doing surgery, but I'm extending myself a lot more into non-operative care. And there's a lot of, I think, new, very exciting modalities to be able to do that. But I think the key thing is to have an entirely integrated, comprehensive approach. And if you do that, I mean, I think that's the first stepping stone to get people to start changing their attitude, how they view themselves.
Now, when you're dealing with an elite athlete as a customer and a grandmother as a customer, does the elite athlete just say, well, Dr. Raj knows his stuff, I'm just going to do whatever he says? And then the grandmother might have, hey, I went on WebMD and it says to do that. Like, which one's more of a pain for you?
You know, I got to tell you, honestly, for me, it's a learning experience for me every time I see any patient. And it's a great interaction. And I don't really kind of judge one over the other. I will tell you that it's sometimes easier in terms of elite athletes, in terms of getting them to do what you want to, but then their expectations are a lot different. So, and there's always a trade-off. And let me tell you, some of the toughest people in the world I've ever met are grandmothers. So I don't want to downplay that at all. And I can certainly tell you my grandparents and my mom and the people I see are the best people in the world. So, you know, I really don't catch a whole lot of that. And I got to tell you, I actually like the idea of addressing some of the issues patients, you know, have regarding their own research. And in fact, really, it's our job more than anything else to educate our patients. And, and that really enables them and empowers them. I like the fact that they'll research a lot of different issues. But I also like the fact that when they come to see me, they come with an open mind, not saying that, hey, this is what I want, expecting me to deliver that. And if it makes sense, I will. But if not, you know, we'll educate them further.
Now, what are the most common types of injuries you see?
Well, for me, I mean, you know, one of my specialties is what we call cartilage repair and cartilage transplant. So one of the focuses I have is really on arthritis, which is by far the most prevalent problem. And primarily I deal with knees and shoulders, but I deal with the elbows, ankles. We take care of, you know, backs and hands and everything else. But for me, my specialty really is knee and shoulder surgery and everything from meniscal tears to ACLs that we see in athletes. But a lot of what I treat is arthritis types of conditions, which include, you know, doing a lot of joint replacements, partial knee replacements, robotic knees that we do. We do a lot of limb realignment type of surgeries, you know, in terms of joint preservation. But I think the biggest leap that we're seeing is really, you know, there was once upon a time we would essentially in medicine treat things with benign neglect. In fact, the worst place you can go to see, you know, to get treatment is to a physician office. Then we went into the modality, certainly in orthopedics, for reconstructive surgery. We started repairing a lot of joints. Now I think the real goal is to restore a joint, and it's really biologics.
Now, when you're talking about arthritis, can you share a little bit about why that is such, it's so more, it seems like it's more prevalent now, or it's affecting people at younger ages, and that how that kind of wear and tear impacts the joint over time?
That's a great question. I mean, it's, you know, it's by far the most prevalent because for a couple of reasons, people are living longer, number one, and people are more active, and they also have a higher level of expectation. I've got a number of patients well into their 60s who are running marathons. I mean, that's a routine part of my practice.
And then probably 20 years ago, that wasn't.
You know, it wasn't probably quite as prevalent, but there were still folks there. They were just weeded out a little bit better, you know, because, you know, the ones that survived, really the ones that were able to continue. But now with our tools, we're able to facilitate that. I'm able to let people run longer and ride bikes and do different types of competitive, you know, sports like triathlons, biathlons, et cetera. But, you know, the basic, you know, I think the idea to convey is, you know, with a joint, all your bones are covered by cartilage. Cartilage doesn't have a nerve supply. That's how it functions. You don't have much pain when you have intact cartilage, kind of like the nails on your finger. But over time, cartilage wears out because it doesn't have a very good blood supply. And as cartilage wears out, the underlying bone gets exposed, et cetera. There's a host of inflammatory mediators which lead to the breakdown of the joint. What's important to understand, however, is that doesn't necessarily mean that's the death of the joint. You know, a lot of folks, even with bone-on-bone arthritis, we can keep them going without having to necessarily replace the joint. And I think there's a, you know, I think we have a better understanding of what really causes pain. I think it's important that we don't treat x-rays. Mm-hmm. We don't treat a diagnosis. What we treat is a patient. And that's really our focus. And when you do that, it's really a paradigm shift in terms of how many people you can get better. Where seemingly, you know, a couple of decades ago, and even in my training, you know, you got arthritis, you're bone on bone, you need a joint placement. Well, I can tell you for every person that I replace a joint on, I got 10 running around there that are bone on bone that I'm not operating on.
And then how do you deal with, like, what does the patient have to go through if they're not replacing the joint?
Well, I think that's, I mean, again, I think what it comes down to is this. I think you have to have a combination therapy, comprehensive approach. And oftentimes what we do is we try one thing. If it doesn't work, we try the next thing. It's a very sequential way of thinking, if you will. And that doesn't work. You got to try a lot of different things simultaneously. The most important thing to understand is you have to educate the patient as to what their problem is. Then all of a sudden now you engage them. And if you can't engage them, and if you're doing all the treatment, it's just never going to work. So once the patient starts taking control of their own body, and one of the most important elements of that is, for example, you know, physical therapy, but it's really done on your own. You got to strengthen the joint. You've got to understand what is it that causes problems. A lot of exercises actually hurt you more than help you. So you have to have an educated professional. You know, one of the things we focus on is not only with our physical therapy, but post-physical therapy. Get them hooked up with the right people that understand the joint, that understand what those patients' expectations are. And then there's a lot of biologic types of treatments that we can have. There's a lot of different injectables. There's braces that can be worn. You know, I really try to stay away from oral medications. There are some topicals we can use. I think there are a lot of complications of different types of treatments. So short of surgery, when you start doing that, you know, you don't necessarily tell a patient on a scale of 1 to 10 if their pain's a 10. I'm going to get you down to a 0 or 1, but a lot of times you get them down to a 4 or 5 and they're very functional.
Right, they're doing cartwheels.
Absolutely, you got it.
So now arthritis is a chronic condition, right?
Arthritis is a permanent progressive condition, yes.
And now is there something that a person can do to prevent it from occurring at all, or once your DNA says you're going to have arthritis and you're going to have it at some point in time?
Well, I think, you know, to me that's kind of, and it's a great question, but I don't really focus too much on that because that's something I don't have a lot of control over. What I can do is tell patients, let's control what you can control, right? Yep. And one of the most important aspects of that is weight. For example, if you take a knee joint, you know, a patient comes in there and they've got some level of obesity, which everybody does. But for every pound of body weight, even a relatively normally aligned knee, the knee is seeing about 5 pounds. And if you got a malaligned knee, you're seeing 6 or 7 pounds. So I don't tell patients, hey, go out there and try to lose 30, 40 pounds. That's like climbing Everest. You know, you lose 3 or 4 pounds and all of a sudden your knee is feeling better. And now you've started, you know, getting on the right track. You get more confidence, you build up. So I think the, you know, even though it's chronic and progressive, that's an x-ray and a physiologic diagnosis. That's not necessarily a symptomatic approach to it.
Now, how does diet nutrition play into this?
I think diet and nutrition are absolutely critical. And if anybody tries to downplay that, it doesn't make any sense.
No,
perhaps so. The most important aspect, wouldn't you say,
yeah.
Trace?
I think so. Yeah. And I can get into that. But absolutely, just to tag on what Dr. Raj said, and even Dr. Whale, is I think the most underused side of it is getting a trainer that knows what they're doing. And I happen to be one of the few trainers that have that extensive background where I can actually take the handoff from the physical therapist and really articulate a program that's going to integrate you know, a better lifestyle for the individual based on their injuries. I am bone on bone in my left knee, and I've yet to have knee surgery. And that stems from just understanding physiologically what to train on my body so I'm strong enough to deal with what I do. And I'm getting ready to run a half marathon in 3 weeks. And that's another story. So there's, it's just being hooked up with the right person that really understands what's happening. And I think to go back to your point about integration, that's one of the main things that I wanted to do, was to be able to integrate medicine and personal training, and being able to really bring those two together so we can have a good handoff, so we can have a better quality of service for our consumers and educate them exactly. Nutrition is absolutely the key, because if you're smaller or lighter, it's less pressure on your joints, and then you're going to have less pain, and eventually your quality of life changes. So it's like a domino effect, if you will.
And to piggyback on that, just one comment is, and this is something that we don't oftentimes think about when we talk about nutrition, it's a matter of staying healthy and losing the weight. But also, there's a lot of literature that demonstrates certain types of diet are pro-inflammatory.
Yes.
And so the anti-inflammatory aspect, I don't think can be you know, emphasized enough as well. And that's really what you got to do is, you know, people don't think about, what am I doing to my body? Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we take the expedient route with what we eat, the way we behave. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to go out there, and I haven't run in a couple of weeks, so I'm going to go run down my street on the asphalt. Well, that's crazy. You know, you're going to get hurt. So you got to think about things in a very defined, deliberate manner in terms of diet, lifestyle, training, exercise, weight loss, all those different things. What we should do as healthcare professionals is understand there are really, you know, a number of legs to this stool. It includes the healthcare professional, it includes technology and pharmaceuticals, but the most important aspect of that is the patient.
Yes.
And that's where we really have to come in, educate them, and we really need to be a resource for them. And one of the things that we want to emphasize, as opposed to most, I think the view of orthopedics in the past has been kind of like an urgent care model where, hey, we'll see if I sprain an ankle. What we really want to be is a resource that can allow that continued education care as needed to try to prevent a lot of these from happening.
Well, it sounds like you're also open to working with other professionals in other areas that it's going to give the consumer the best holistic care altogether, not just, you know, you're an orthopedic, so I'm going to just deal with that joint and I'm done. You know, I cut you and then thank you, bye. You're looking at the overall kind of the outcome of care for the rest of their life, not just this one incident.
Absolutely. And that couldn't state any better. I think that's the idea. You know, I think, unfortunately, holistic has its connotations in the conventional, allopathic medical industry. But holistic means you're taking care of the whole person.
If you don't,
it doesn't work. You know, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And I could do a great operation, but if I get poor physical therapy or post physical therapy or don't get the right diet or don't get the right, you know, primary care, et cetera, it all fails.
Yep.
Now, are you seeing that mind shift is happening with medicine in general in today's world?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, it should happen. But, you know, and I think as Dr. Will had mentioned, you know, we're under a lot of stress with respect to time and trying to you know, integrate a total level of care and really, you know, I think take care of our patients the way they need to be. But there's a lot of different constraints on that. So I think what we have to do is start really creating processes which can essentially allow the patient to engage in their own care. Yeah. And there's a lot of different ways of doing that, having, you know, ancillary and supportive aspects to not only our educational websites, but to our own clinical staff and patient resources, if you will, so that when they come in, they're prepared or basically one of the things we do is we, you know, in our electronic health system is we have the patients fill out a lot of information, which allows us to be more interactive and they can communicate with us directly. So little things like that. The next thing I'm really getting into that we're really expanding on is the use of telemedicine. And I think that's going to be a major frontier, which allows us not only to interactively take care of our patients and even from the standpoint of physician extenders, but also I think it really allows us to educate patients in a preventive manner.
Now, I'd like to throw this up to both of you, Dr. Wheel, as well. So please feel free to chime in on this. Where do you see all these fitness gadgets and all these activity trackers fitting into the overall care of a consumer? I mean, a lot of people are leaning on technology today, whether it be, you know, keeping track of their diet, keeping track of their steps. How does that all play together? Or is there a way to play together with a physician as well?
Well, I think absolutely. In the past, patients didn't think about this. They really put the onus on maybe the physician. But now people are really, you know, being more aware of tracking their own vitals, their own statistics, you know, how often they do certain activities. And it's really, they're kind of buying into the process. And it's really making patients and making the general public really more of a team player in their own healthcare.
Yeah.
But now, are you seeing this actually, like, you know, that sounds good and a lot of people have a Fitbit, but is that information getting back to the physician where they're seeing, hey, I know that last week, you know, you said you were going to work out twice and I see your data and you didn't do anything, you know, how interactive is it really? Because a lot of people are keeping track of stuff, but they're not, that data is meaningless if they don't act on it.
No, I wouldn't say it's meaningless because it's really allowing that individual to act and to do things themselves. So it's not going to be, there's no downside to them becoming more active. Now, your point is valid that they're collecting all this data and maybe they don't know what to do with it. But the underlying issue is I think they're becoming more active, and that's certainly going to help with their diet. It's going to help with their weight. And it's not going to be a detriment to their medical care.
I mean, that's a great point. I mean, that's the thing is that at the first point, you know, they're engaged. And once they're engaged, they start at least getting empowered and enabled. One of the problems, of course, in which you're alluding to is that, you know, it's the definition of insanity, doing all the same thing over again, expecting you can have data and you can be doing the wrong thing.
I
think that's the important thing is you can only manage it when you measure it, but you really have to analyze what that data means. So one of the things we really want to do with this interactive approach is actually monitor that, capture that data, and then see how a patient's doing. Because up until now, you know, someone says, okay, I'm twisting and turning this much at night. Is that a good or bad thing? I don't know. What should your heart rate be, et cetera? I mean, a lot of information that we act on is actually very conventional, very limited. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, it's pretty incorrect in terms of really how we're making some of the decisions. So I think what we really have is a brave new world. I think it's time to capture this data and try to make sense of it. And really, the analytics are only now, I think, starting to take place. But, you know, I think the important point is at least people are becoming involved. They're acting. And now we can measure this. Back in the days of, for example, you know, cardiac arrhythmias, you used to put these monitors on patients and, you know, you hope you might pick up a dysrhythmia somewhere along the way. Mm-hmm. Now it's a lot easier to be able to do that. And sometimes you can pick up very subtle problems. Those are death sentences for people when they have a cardiac arrhythmia. So a lot of the information we're able to monitor and we can find out what's important, what's not important. I think that's remaining to be analyzed. But we have to act both on the patient side as well as on the physician side to be able to capture, analyze, and provide good information, turn data into information.
Yep.
And then and make that data actionable. The issue I had and the reason I'm saying that it's meaningless is that it's not that data isn't meaningless. It's just the person thinks that because I have this on that now I'm doing that something's occurring. All that's occurring is you're wearing something and you see that today I only walked 2,500 steps. Like that's, you know, that awareness is great and they're wearing it and they're not acting on any of the data. They're not using it as to stay compliant on some sort of a healthy lifestyle. They think just the act of spending $100 on a Fitbit is enough to get it done.
Well, you need professionals to interpret it.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what we need to do.
But that's where the handoff has to occur, where there has to be some kind of relationship between the patient, with the doctor, with the trainer, where everybody is kind of working together as part of the team.
And I think that's where the trainer can really serve an invaluable service.
Exactly. Exactly. That is exactly where we come in. And that's the push that I'm making for leaders in our industry is to step out, especially if you have the knowledge in this background, is to reach out to the physicians and physical therapists, occupational therapists, all these different individuals that's responsible for this and really taking advantage of what a Fitbit does. I actually had to go through training with several of my clients. I'm like, no, this is why you do this. This is why you have to sleep this amount. Like there's a whole educational process happening. Imagine the impact if we all got together, right? Like we have the strategic handoff. Like Dr. Wood can say, all right, I have the trainer for you. This is what you do after physical therapy. You go see Tracy Palfrey, plug. And, and figure out an integrated program based off of what the physical therapy has said. I mean, how awesome is that? So now the handoff is to me and I get to integrate them back into real life.
Right. Now, Dr. Rogers, you mentioned that with the heart arrhythmia, like now that you can track that, I guess, over the phone or over the internet or something on a more real-time basis.
Right.
Whereas at one point you would only see the person when they physically came in and you could take their blood pressure and see there's a problem. And if there happened to not be a problem in that one moment, you think everything's fine, but you know, they walk out to their car, there could have been a problem.
Absolutely. And again, I think I think we have the technology, but like you mentioned, technology just dumps a lot of data. You have to have healthcare professionals, and to Tracy's, to her benefit, she's phenomenal. She actually came to our office, visited the physical therapist, and, you know, you have to have that handoff's got to be perfect. It's like running a relay race.
Right.
You know, you could have everybody there, but if the handoff's not good, you drop the baton, it doesn't work. And so there has to be continuity of care, and there has to be, a platform which allows for communication back and forth. And that's really what I'm trying to get at is I think right now it's relatively conventional. At least mm-hmm. we're trying to move in that direction. But I think with some of the record keeping systems we have and other things that we're really developing further with respect to telemedicine and with respect to the EHR systems is it allows her to input information directly into our system.
Right.
So I can see it directly and mm-hmm. monitor it. And the next level, of course, there is somebody gets the right type of technology device and they can simply download it into the system or upload it in the system. That is really where I think it becomes really, really exciting. And then furthermore, the next step of that is just like if you get a lab panel right now, you know, there's maybe 50 labs on there. The only ones you care to look at are the ones that are starred, right?
Right.
So then it can also pick out the outliers and then we can further make decisions based on that. That's where I think things are getting really exciting because unless we create a process, you know, the flow of information is going to be, I think, very time consuming and it's going to be difficult to act on.
Yep.
Well, good stuff, everybody. Yes. And, Dr. Roger, a website? Do you guys have a website?
Yeah, it's the www.AtlantaOrthopedicInstitute.com.
And then on that, there's information?
Sure. There's information about our practice, our partners, the different type of services we provide. And the next level, of course, there will be, obviously we're focusing on making it more interactive. And certainly, I think I would like to emphasize that, you know, I think the most important aspect of we do, in addition to educating patients, is really creating an integrated model. And I, you know, and all kudos to Tracy. You know, that's the type of trainer and the type of healthcare individual that's outside our practice that we want to engage and deal with. That's bright, that's motivated, and someone with whom we can provide information back and forth in the best care for patients.
Good stuff. Well, Tracy, thank you for putting this episode together.
Yay! You're welcome. Thank you, Dr. Will. Thank you, Dr. Raj. These are two awesome physicians who are extremely busy, so I appreciate your time. And go see them if you have all these issues.
That's right. Dr. Raj, you can find at AtlantaOrthopedicInstitute.com and Dr. Wheel is at LowBackPain.com. This is Lee Cantor for Tracy Palfrey and all of the folks here at Business Radio X. We will see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.